Hey, and welcome back to another episode of Scalescape. I'm your host, Justin Chu. With me today is Cameron, CEO and co-founder of Holo, and what they do is to help therapists and counselors to better support people with mental health problems, and for everyday people to better understand their own mental health journeys. Cameron's a student entrepreneur himself, and the work that he's done is incredible. This is the Holo story. Enjoy! Hey Cameron, super nice to have you on the show. You know, I'm really excited to have this conversation with you, right? Ever since we're talking about Holo and all the cool things that Holo's been doing. So again, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm super excited to be here and be amongst all the other co-hosts for your show.
Yeah, of course. You know, I'm really excited to have you in as well. Why don't you kick things off by telling us about yourself, what Holo's about, and how you ended up co-founding Holo?
Sure. So I was born and raised in Hong Kong and lived in Dubai for like 10 years. So I come from a background of biotechnology, actually, as my major here at HKU. But I'm doing a minor in science entrepreneurship too. And so I started Holo as sort of a social innovation project roughly around 2 years ago. And it started off as quite a small student-led project, and I was really inspired by the social entrepreneurs that were the tutors in that session, and they really encouraged me to carry forward the idea. So then I decided, might as well try it out. This is something that I felt was more meaningful for me as a career path, and I decided to keep going to different competitions and pivoting the idea as I went. And eventually it became the Holo as it is today, and being able to win the Microsoft Imagine Cup, which was amazing. And I guess that's where I am today.
Yeah, of course. And hey, congratulations on that win. I'm really happy for all of you, for the team. I just wanted to ask maybe if you could clarify what Holo does exactly, and maybe a little bit about on sort of the target market and exact pain point that you're trying to address.
Sure. So what we do at Holo is really targeting those user groups that either don't understand their current mental health condition or their well-being status and may be starting to think about, do I need to see a professional or not? But these are quite, like, they have a high barrier, they're pretty expensive. And so what we wanted to do was build a technology that can help these people screen themselves beyond just the clinical standard, golden standard of testing, like the PHQ-9 or whatever other questionnaire. We wanted to give them something that's feasible and visible that they can see and handle. So we equipped them with the technology that we developed to try to give more of a holistic, quote-unquote, diagnosis and support them through either self-help or continuing to develop their own well-being path, whether it's with a professional or even just on their own.
Yeah, amazing. And, you know, it's really about that holistic picture of someone's mental health journey. You know, there's a huge, pain point for therapists and psychiatrists when they're trying to diagnose and when they're trying to screen patients with mental health problems, right? And the only information that they can get traditionally, as you would know, is just from that first point of screening. And so it definitely helps, what you're doing with Holo, and so valuable, right? All this data and information that you provide really helps to bolster, and help them with your work. And so what I want to get into now is sort of the technology side of things. What kind of tech are you using to track and screen, emotion, sleep quality, and all these other kind of metrics that capture mental health? And how do you also secure, data privacy and all these kind of things?
Sure. So what we're doing at Holo is kind of a mixed bag of different AI vision technologies and a couple of other what I call as behavioral analytics or some form of it. So I guess I can go into a bit of detail. So what we're trying to do when we look at a video or a picture of someone's face is look at several factors. So for instance, part of it, we use Microsoft's standard emotion API, which is just using 62 points on the face to get an emotional rating, and it's based on their database. So a lot of what we try take from there is from them, and relies on their database. But we built some technology to do some analysis on heart rate through non-contact means and analyzing sleep quality. So for the heart rate, what we're really doing is using a bit of biology knowledge here and my biotech background when I was reading a lot of studies on this non-contact heart rate analysis. And so we were able to find different algorithms and ways to analyze the face specifically to see small changes, basically detecting change in blood vessels in the face and being able to see the heart rate variability from this, which is a very known concept in psychology, that the heart rate variability is an indicator of of like stress if they're in a resting state but experiencing this flight or flight response, then it could be an indicator for chronic stress. Similar to that sort of realm of ideas, we build other technologies to analyze like the eyes and the movement, and hopefully as we continue developing more and more, we'll be looking at like the voice intonations or even just like eye movement speeds and things like that to kind of create this more holistic, quote-unquote objective way of looking at someone's mental health.
Awesome. And you know, the second piece to that is with all these metrics that you're, you know, collecting, there's a very natural issue of data protection and privacy, right? So, you know, what has Holo done to ensure that all of this data is being handled with confidentiality?
Definitely. And I think it's a really large concern for a lot of people, especially with the rise of like the data privacy like understanding in the public. I think especially after Facebook had that huge scandal. I think what we're trying to do in Holo is really stick to the more stricter regulations, because in Hong Kong specifically, the healthcare regulations and data privacy regulations are really poor. And so when we are building it, we want to comply with the GDPR or any, even like the US has a lot of FDA regulations on healthcare technology. So we try to stick to those as closely as possible. So for instance, we will remove personal particulars relating to specific data. We have a set retention period where we keep the data for a certain amount of time and discard it afterwards, and basically ensuring that we have like end-to-end encryption, meaning that if we get hacked, it has to have a key on the other side to really understand or make sense of the information. So all these like security steps that we try to make sure that it's really secure for our users, because in the end, confidentiality is like a golden standard in psychotherapy and counseling services. So I felt like it was super important for us to echo that in our services
too. Right. And that's super great to hear, because you know, as you would know, in healthcare and health tech, when we're looking at companies and products, what we're looking at is that the consumer and the user at the other end of this is the biggest stakeholder in the system, right? And so these steps that you take in ensuring their privacy goes a long way in retaining them and, you know, your customers in the long run, because it shows a very high regard for their well-being, and especially with that whole service component of healthcare.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's actually really important in not only doing it, but being able to effectively market it to your customers or your users to actually show them and help them understand that, oh, hey, like, don't worry about your data, because we're actually doing something about it. And I think that's something maybe startups or me specifically, I'm struggling with, or trying to wrap our heads around how might we like better execute or communicate this with our users. And I think it's really important.
Right. And what I do want to know, and what I'm really interested in, is maybe sort of that, you know, value proposition of Holo and how you are different to the other solutions in the market. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I think the way that we try to differ ourselves from a lot of the mood tracking apps or a lot of these self-reporting apps that track your mental health over time, I feel like a lot of those are really nice for what they are, and the existing technology at the time, it makes sense as sort of like a digital transformation of an existing solution, which is just pen and paper questionnaires. And they're very much just, how are you feeling? Rate yourself on this scale, and you'll get an output number that gives you a rough idea about your mental health and a rough idea of whether or not you need to see a professional. But in a lot of the cases, it's based on a very rigid definition of mental health. So if you tick these boxes, yes, you have depression to a serious degree or a minor degree. But in all honesty, like, mental health is such a, like, a, we talk about a lot in healthcare about comorbidity, which is like the interaction of different diseases with each other. And so for mental health specifically, in my perspective, coming from like a healthcare slash doing a bit of reading in this area, I found that there's a dichotomy between some mental health professionals seeing the rigid definitions as like really cool and interesting as a way to diagnose people. But there's also this other school of thought that says that, well, depression and anxiety or insomnia and all these different mental illnesses actually interact with each other to a different degree and affect this individual. So if you actually want to make a real diagnosis, a real understanding of this person's unique experience, then you really have to dig deeper than just a very surface level questionnaire. And I think that's what we're trying to do, is build this objective technology to do a lot of this first initial triage for these users, really, and then be able to go in depth with the professional. And so really make sure that we incorporate the professional practices along the way of our service, instead of just being a standalone mobile app that they download here and they say, okay, well, this is your diagnosis, this is what we suggest, this is all your self-help needs, done, dusted, out of the way, right? But we really want to make sure that it's not replacing therapy, it's not replacing a professional, because in the end, I'm not qualified to tell you how to deal with your mental health. You're not qualified to deal with your own mental health. Here's someone that can really help you. And if you're in a position to pay for it, great, you're going to have amazing services. But if you're not, there's still a lot of options through NGOs or even like pro bono cases that can really help you out, especially in whatever situation you're in.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you know, you really hit the nail on the head there, because, you know, like what you just said, health tech companies, the real value comes in, right, with them being intermediaries. You know, and when you're helping to build your product for businesses to the consumer at the end, it's a B2B2C model that you're then able to help, you know, to bridge the gap between what the counselors are doing, you know, and your end user, you know, which is the consumers themselves. And we're talking about how mental health is so incredibly complex. Like, I naturally want to ask, what were some of the main challenges that you faced, you know, in the early stages of Hollow, and how'd you end up dealing with these challenges through either pivoting or tweaking your product or things like that?
100%. And I think one of the hardest hurdles that we had to overcome as like sort of mental health tech company was coming over that initial barrier of people not believing in mental health as an issue in Asia specifically. That was a large problem for me entering a lot of competitions early on. We had our product model at the time was very much just a platform to connect with the therapist, sort of like Airbnb, just book a therapist, online counseling, and that's it, right? As we went to more and more competitions, we start to realize these solutions already exist. They're either being supported or they're being drafted to the side because no one is quote unquote like paying attention to mental health and or like understanding the significance. I think that was one of the biggest hurdles that we had to overcome specifically in Asia. And I think it kind of benefited us that Microsoft was a more international competition in that sense, where they were able to lend an ear to mental health issues. But in Asia specifically, we kind of went in a way to try to really, really target who we talk to. And I think that's really important. And I guess a lot of founders will echo the same thing, is you can't attack the ocean and try to get into all these like markets at the same time. You really have to choose your battles, right? And for us, that meant to go into the NGOs, directly talk to the counselors and the front line of mental health, to pitch the idea, to understand their problems and really be able to work closely with them in building what we have at the moment. And I think that's sort of one of the larger issues that we came across.
Yep, thanks for being so candid about that. I really appreciate it. And again, with what you were saying about how Hollow is able to provide that kind of goldmine of data to the therapist, you know, you very eloquently put it, because then the real challenge is, you know, when you have a product that's super amazing on its own, you know, by its own merits, and it's a very good product, but then the challenge comes with adoption, right? Especially with mental health solutions such as Hollow, right? Is that the stigma that's attached to mental health, and that people don't, you know, necessarily want to use your product to even learn about what their mental health journey is like. You know, on that note about, you know, adoption challenge, what were some, you know, measures that you've taken to maybe combat that?
So I think for us specifically in the adoption challenge, I think I came to a realization quite early on that it's really a matter of changing an entire culture, which is insane to think about, because that can happen over decades, and really the only support you can do for that is education, but no one invests in education so you can't really make that much money off it. So for me, it was very much like, okay, how do I approach this and really think about how to get my product into the hands of the people that already are seeing these services, so I can build up some form of traction. Right? If I can build some form of traction behind my product, get it in the hands of people who already see therapists, and even though that's a small market size, as I continue to build up the marketing and the different channels, whether it's in schools, especially in the younger generations, they're really coming across to the idea that mental health is important, because they're seeing their peers or like their older peers in university or in high schools, some of them taking their own lives because of how stressful it is. I think it's a clear like message to those younger generations that this is important, something needs to be done. And I think as we're like in the last couple of years, the government in Hong Kong has made some efforts in improving the social worker like presence in local schools, but I still think it can be done much better. But in reality, I think it's really up to the private sector to try to help encourage this movement of education. And I think as a social enterprise working in this space, it can be part of our role as well to really be able to invest into educating and marketing, and all this entire sphere of marketing to us is really more about educating and understanding mental health, especially for the younger generations. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and you know, that's so incredible, Cameron, because for me it really comes down to passion and purpose. You know, and that captures, you know, that kind of impact and social impact that Hollow is driving to create, you know, with the product that you're building. You know, and I do want to dive into the localization of the product though. You know, you did mention that point of picking the right battles, so targeting the right users, target the right market. Yeah. You know, do you have any plans of localizing Hollow for the Cantonese speaking community, or you know, are you doing it in parallel? You know, what's that look like for your team?
Yeah, so that was a question I asked my co-founder really early on. Was like, we realized a lot of the NGOs that we're talking to are like, oh, is this available in Cantonese and Chinese as well? Because that's a majority of our service sector. And that hit me. I was like, oh yeah, that's probably something we should do. And I started thinking about how to translate our app. And it turns out majority of it was relatively straightforward. It was just a matter of translating word for word. But a part of our app is also the NLP function, which we're sort of building and researching at the same time. And luckily enough, it's not something too important to the model at the moment that we have to stop everything to get a Chinese NLP running if we want to do this in parallel. So for us right now, we are developing in parallel Cantonese, Chinese, and English at the same time, just for the purpose of serving Hong Kong's needs. And I think it's a benefit anyway for us to do this early on, so that in the future when we want to move or expand to Taiwan, Singapore, or other like Asian countries or Chinese speaking countries, it'd be super easy for us.
Right. And you know that bit about localization in terms of a product in the different countries, you know, it's not just simply a matter of changing the language. You know, it's really about the diving deep into the different conceptualizations of mental health in the different geographies and spaces, right? You know, mental health is conceived differently in North America. It's also different in Africa and Asia, for example. But if you're able to pick up on those different nuances, you know, then you're able to build a product that's right for the different markets. And so, you know, what are the next steps here on out, and could you walk us through maybe what Hull is going to look like in a couple months down the road?
Sure. So for right now, coronavirus, I guess, has slowed down a lot of businesses, and for us it has too. So right now our roadmaps slow down a bit, but what we're doing in the next couple of months is a lot of data driving with the NGOs. So we're doing a lot of collection, a lot of consultation with the professionals who provide the care. And so we're just in between product building, testing, user testing and validation stages for us, and building that community factor and building some traction numbers behind our product. And so we're focusing mostly on the app first. And then once it is ready, probably by late this year or early next, the app will be released publicly for free. Anyone can download it and use it. And the NGOs will be starting to develop with them their web app dashboard, whether some of them may have their own already. So we're still figuring that part out. But that's something we are moving towards in terms of monetization in the NGO or counseling service space at the moment. And we are thinking of other ways to like make it more financially attractive to investors who are maybe outside the impact investment or medical investment spaces that want a shorter turnover and aren't too interested in your R&D efforts. So that's something we're currently thinking about and working on, but that's kind of the next couple of months for us.
Yo, super amazing. And hey, Cameron, we definitely have to stay in touch and to be able to keep up with that, you know, all the amazing things that Hollow is doing. You know, I do want to ask a couple other questions though, just moving away from Hollow. Being a student yourself, you know, having to juggle academics while building your own company, you know, what's it like being a student entrepreneur?
Yeah, my suggestion for students who are thinking about doing a startup is, if you're going to do it, don't care too much about your grades, because honestly, I'm not doing amazing with my GPA, but I realize that this is something I want to pursue as my career, so I put a lower expectation on myself. I'm still trying hard for my biotech degree, and I definitely still love it and I have a passion for it. But it's something that's on the side of, for me. And instead of having a lot of people talk about a side hustle, for me, my education's my side hustle. And I'm focusing mostly on the startup. I think a large part of it comes down to discipline and being able to think about your own time that you're spending either socializing or focusing on studying and things like that. And I think for me, it comes down to what are you willing to sacrifice and how well you can balance your time. And it's still a learning process for me. I've been doing this for like almost over a year, full time, basically. And I still have next to no social life, but now I can use COVID as an excuse. But that's something I guess I have to balance on a personal level.
No, yeah, you're exactly right, Cameron. And, you know, textbook academics don't necessarily translate to that real life, real world innovation.
100%.
You know, but that being said, I also do want to caution our listeners and budding entrepreneurs that, you know, go ahead and ideate and think about things that you want to solve and do that. But it's not something that's a niche. And, you know, it's not something that you can just throw yourself into and disregard your academics, right? Entrepreneurship is a journey that you need to be strategic and really very disciplined with.
Yeah, but actually, I think being in university can be a really good leverage point for a lot of startups. If you are doing something related to research or a bit more like scientific or engineering related, it's really good to use the resources in university that we have access to. They have a lot of support systems for that. But definitely don't drop out or put a lower like significance to your studies unless you have some form of like proof or traction that this is viable for the future. Definitely stay in school.
Yeah, no, like totally, you know, great point about universities, because there's so many resources available, right? And even for Holo, you know, the advisors that you had, the incubator that you're at with iDendron, you know, really have to be strategic about the resources and the bandwidth of your network, right? And a huge part of that comes with being a student at university. So, you know, thanks again for reminding us, you know, on these really good points. 100%. I do want to end things by giving you, Cameron, like an explanation of the title of our podcast, right? Skillscape. When we break down skill and scape, you know, intrinsic to building and scaling and really pushing a company, building it right from the ground up, we need to take into account the external factors, right? The landscape of the picture, right? And that's things like geography, the product market fit, the timing, things like that. So what is one tip that you can give founders to scale-scape their companies towards success?
I think don't focus too much on the scale at the early stages, because if you're building a product and you really find that product market fit, the scale will come naturally and people will come to you to invest money, then you can really just scale. And so if you really focus on making sure your users, the end users and your customers really enjoy your product, and even if you're charging a low price, they may even start asking you, why aren't you charging me more for this? This is amazing, right? And so if you hit that point and you've realized your customers really enjoy it and you're ready to like really move and scale, then it's just something that will come naturally and you can't really force the scale, because in the end, if you're pumping money into something that's just a problem solution fit, you're going to kind of just flop. And I think that's many founders will say only 1% of startups succeed, and the main reason is the lack of product market fit. It seems really cliche, but honestly, it's really true.
Hey, that's such an awesome thought to end on. Cameron, thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy building Holo, you know, and for you to carve out that time to do this with me, I really appreciate it. So, hey, thank you so much.
It's amazing. Thanks, Justin.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Scalescape. If you like this content, check out Scalescape on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You know, I'd love to hear your thoughts and to connect with you. I'll see you next week.